Good morning to the Surreal News listeners. Okay, we have a great show today, kind of a diverse show. We have Andrea Daniels, who's running for Sarasota City Commissioner on the Surreal News.
Good morning.
She's going to be great, I can tell. This is going to be funny and humorous and political. And Steve Squared is here, too. Good morning, Steve. Grab your own mic, but you can use this one if you want to temporarily.
Good morning, Steve.
All right, everybody's here. And in 10 minutes, we have a special report on the bodies exhibit. This is a controversial issue. We're going to be talking all about that. We have Evelyn Tenenbaum, who's a professor at Albany Law School and the Medical School, and others who are going to be calling in and joining us. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to have a special report from Kendra Muntz with an update on the revote issue. So we've got a really full show this week. Let's try to get through it all. All right, Steve, you've got some interesting things to report. Where are we going to start?
Oh, I want to talk about the homosexual sheep. Apparently, they prefer rams to ewes. That's not ewes singular, that's ewes plural. And apparently, 8% of sheep are homosexual. Now, that's a very interesting thing. Now, Martina Navratilova, our Sarasota resident and great tennis player, of course, she's come out against everything about this study. I don't know really why it is, but apparently she's quite offended by the work they're doing with this.
Yes, and some of the controversy associated with that is it's thought that if they could find out what in the sheep's brain makes 8% of the sheep gay, that somehow they were going to use that to manipulate the human brains. That turns out maybe not to be the case, even though this was an NIH-funded grant. But, of course, once you get that in the news, and that is even out there, then you get the controversy associated with it. So there's some real things, there's some surreal things, and there's some absolutely false things associated with this great story, gay sheep.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe it's the Greek farmers. Oh, I didn't say that, did I?
All right, the other thing I need to just mention about every 15 minutes is WSLR, Low Power FM, 96.5 in Sarasota, Florida. All right, so I heard a story about a guy had a stroke and something kind of strange happened to
him. Yeah, he stopped smoking.
This is according to the AP, which came out January 25th. And what they think is going on here, folks, is they think they found a place in the brain which controls your urges for smoking and maybe for other addictive substances. Very interesting.
It's called the insula. I've actually never even heard of that section of the brain. I guess it's a very small one, but I guess that controls a lot of the addictive behavior. The possibilities for this are tremendous, either surgical for preventing addictions or medical. It's still too early to find out exactly what can be done about this, but it's a very intriguing possibility.
So instead of
treating things medically, for example?
Right. Yeah.
Right. We should spend our money researching that part of the brain as opposed to researching gay sheep.
Yeah, it's
gay sheep to get them to stop smoking.
That's
those
right.
Gay sheep.
Gay sheep very seldom smoke. That's another possibility, too.
All right. So the other thing we just have to report is the Virgin Kokomo Dragon gave birth. And this is according to AP, which came out on the 24th. Remember that one, Steve?
Yes, we did. We talked about the virgin birth. We had quite a few evangelicals on our lawn after talking about the virgin birth. And
well,
now
the
there's five virgin births.
Now it's a birth.
Now it's an actual birth. And there were some wise men that came down and talked about this, too, with us. We were very pleased to see that. They were bringing frankincense and myrrh.
Anybody want to guess what a Kokomo dragon is?
Yeah, I read the article, so it can be actually 10 feet long. They actually had to separate the babies from the mother because the mother is so ravenous. She eats over 100 pounds of food a day that she'd be eating her young otherwise.
No comment.
No comment about
that at
all.
I won't go near with that
all.
One.
No. We'll stay away from that completely.
All right, so it's
right
a
now.
Type of lizard. It's not
yes,
a real dragon, obviously.
Well, if it's a 10-foot lizard, I'd call that a dragon. That's pretty big.
And if it ate your foot, you'd be dragging.
Yeah, I'd be dragging. Yeah, it can eat a whole sheep actually in one bite without hooves and all.
So again, we're back to the sheep.
We're back to the sheep, but we're just fixated on that.
Are we coming back there?
Ew.
So Continental Flight had to make an emergency landing by the co-pilot. This came in the AP a few days ago, and this is a flight actually last Saturday from Houston. Anybody want to guess? You probably know the answer. Why they had to make an emergency flight?
I actually cheated and read about it.
And the answer is?
Go on.
That the pilot died.
pilot died.
Which is very sad.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, that is terrible. Yeah. I'm glad the co-pilot was being awake on this. As a co-pilot here sometimes on the show, you know, sometimes it's hard to stay awake. And speaking of staying awake, did anybody see CNN the other day when they
were going to talk about Cheney?
Oh,
no,
not Cheney. No. McCain.
Oh, McCain.
During the State of the Union address, John McCain, our presumptive nominee for the Republican Party for president, with a right now the front runner or very close to the front runner, he was sleeping. CNN,
do you blame him?
I couldn't blame him at all, but I thought he'd at least stay awake for his own president. But I even stayed awake for the president, and boy, that wasn't easy. And I was on a nice, comfortable sofa. He was sitting on one of those hardback chairs.
All right, the State of the Union. I just have to mention on the Colbert show, they counted the number of eye blinks with Nancy Pelosi and Cheney, and they had them side by side, and obviously they had done some editing here, and they were counting up, and Nancy Pelosi was blink, 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 like something was wrong with her eyes. Cheney blinked once, and Nancy Pelosi blinked 61 times.
I think Nancy Pelosi smiled more than Cheney. I think that's probably a given.
Maybe it's just gas. You don't know.
He looked awfully uncomfortable.
And also, people were commenting on Nancy Pelosi's outfit, and apparently she was at some type of cocktail party beforehand and spilled some kind of chocolate thing over her regular outfit and had to wear the other outfit instead. Surreal stuff we're reporting.
I thought she looked charming. Speaking of Cheney, I just read the other day a remarkable quote. He says, "There's problems in Iraq, but it's not a terrible situation." I wonder what he considers a terrible situation. Maybe
well, don't
sheep.
You know?
I
mean, he told us that the insurgents were on their last throes. Remember that?
Oh yeah, I know. We're winning this war, and we're installing democracy. I'll tell you.
Now we could certainly go there and talk about many other things. For example, Cheney's basically been criticized now as being just off in another planet and completely out of touch with anything that's going on. That came out in the news. He was on the Wolf Blitzer. He was interviewed and looked really bad there. He wouldn't even answer any questions about his gay daughter, which I thought was an appropriate question, considering how that's part of the Republican agenda about gay issues.
Well, I wish we'd put this whole gay issue thing really to rest right now. It's personal lives of people. It really shouldn't be part of politics. And the Republicans, of course, they brought it on initially with trying to impeach Clinton for his personal life.
And since when we're talking about the war, and of course, the Senate voted against the Bush-Iraq plan, and Bush is scrambling and trying to prevent more Republicans from voting against the plan. Now, those of you that may say, well, why bother? It's a non-binding agreement, etc. Well, if that's the case, why is Bush pushing so hard to try to block this? And it's thought to be a prelude for a real binding resolution, which is coming up next, folks.
Well, we'd like to see that. Interesting about Senator Rockefeller claiming that Cheney did interfere with congressional hearings on Florida Iraq intelligence. Interesting. The pressure they're putting on people, and these are Senator Rockefeller, I believe he's a Republican, is he not?
He's
a Democrat. No?
Democrat? I don't have that in front of
but
me.
But whatever, he everybody's
Democratic.
So, yeah, everybody.
He's the Democratic
he's
chairman
Democratic.
Of the former head of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yes, and
there you go.
Okay. And he's talking about the pressures, just like we had last week. We had the CIA analyst talking about the pressures that were on him to actually manipulate the intelligence.
The Iraqi vice president called the U.S. Invasion an idiot decision. That came out in the news, according to Reuters. Bush is asking for $10.6 billion for Afghanistan, according to the New York Times, which came out yesterday.
Yeah, the Taliban is having a real resurgence in Afghanistan. We went into Iraq well before we had the situation in hand in Afghanistan, and unfortunately the Taliban, they're coming back strong. And
they wouldn't dare do anything like put up schools and things
I mean, you know, to say they're gone and they're actually having their own school system in there right now. They're actually a de facto government in a good part of Afghanistan.
And that was reported. They are putting up schools. It's embarrassing to our forces, because they're able to get more construction, reconstruction done than we've ever done, and they're the ones getting credibility in Afghanistan.
That's right. Well, we hate to see those guys do it, and a lot of people in this country were not against the war in Afghanistan. They were supporting the people that did attack us, after all. But the war in Iraq just took all that pressure away from Afghanistan. The Taliban's coming back. What a shame. And now they're the number one opium producers. I think they produce 90% of the opium that's consumed in this country.
All right, according to Tim Weber and the BBC, the Internet is doomed, and we're losing it, and it's going to be taken over by corporations. And actually, that's a fake story, and I want to tell you that the Internet might be doomed, and we might be heading in that direction if we don't do something about it. So we're not quite doomed yet, but please save the Internet and do everything you can to contribute to this cause and prevent Comcast and Time Warner from jacking up prices for the Internet and basically ruining it. We take a lot of our information from Huffington Post and other sources on the Internet, and we could easily lose that if part of this push is going through from the corporations to take over the Internet.
The freedom of speech issue is a really big issue over here. And the Internet, the media has been taken over a lot by the conglomerates, the Rupert Murdochs and the Fox TVs, and they're consolidating. So the news that's available has gone through a big filter. The Internet's been our savior. There's so many people that are allowed to use the Internet and get the news out that way, and we just hate to see it go the way of big media productions.
Yeah, how else are you going to hear, for example, that Prince Harry missed his war training after a late-night clubbing with his girlfriend, according to The Sun, which came out this week. Remember, he made a big deal from England about how he was going to do this war training, and then he didn't show up.
Yeah, gee, who does that sound like, who went to war and National Guard just kind of never showed up?
Bush.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. Maybe that's a prerequisite for a higher office these days.
Now, did you hear last week there was a wife who induced labor so her husband could watch the Bears-Saints game?
Well,
that was reported in AP, which came out last week. Well, there's a devoted wife for you.
That certainly is. That's almost as good as inducing labor so you can get the income tax deduction. But she did, at least wait until January. So she'll get a deduction 2007 instead of 2006. But I'd just like to see the doctor that agreed to do this for that reason.
Well, he probably wanted to see the game, too.
Yeah.
Good point. Love it. All right, the other thing I'm just dying to report is, remember that White House Correspondents' Dinner with Colbert, who gave it to President Bush? Well, this year they're being careful, and Rich Little is going to do it instead, and he's much less controversial.
Is he still alive?
That was what I thought when I first heard about that.
He's not, but he's going to do it anyway. No,
that's impressive.
Will anyone really know?
All right. And also, you remember President Bush is going to have his presidential library at SMU, which is the Southern Methodist University. So a group of Methodist ministers is gathering to try to prevent that. They don't want it. They say that Bush's views are inconsistent with Methodist views, and they're doing all they can to block the president's library for ending up at SMU.
Wow, that is really fascinating. Wow.
And plus, yeah, I mean, they'd be getting all this money for it, so they must be pretty well motivated to do it because, I mean, they have certainly a financial interest in doing it, but a moral interest in not doing it.
Boy, that's great. Did you hear also in the news today that New York City is going to come up with its own brand of condoms? This is really fascinating. They're giving away apparently 18 million condoms. They figure they might as well have an I Love New York on it. I want to ask Andrea about that, too. Are we going to have our own Sarasota brand with David on top of our condom?
I'm going to reserve to comment until after I win the election.
Okay.
All right, so we're listening. This Andrea Daniels is in the studio with us. She's running for Sarasota City Commissioner. We're going to be talking with more about her campaign in a little while. We have a special bodies exhibit call coming in, which is overdue. We expect that any minute. At the top of the hour, we have a revote issue. We're going to give you Kendra Munce's update. This is WSLR 96.5 Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida, and you're listening to The Surreal News. And while we have a little time here, let me just do our disclaimer. So these views are not those of WSLR, its employees, its board, its volunteers, Andrea Daniels or the Albany Law School or Kendra Bunce or anybody else. This is a political humor show. Take what you want and leave the rest. And we want to credit the blogs, which we did before, where we get a lot of our source from. What's going on, Steve?
Oh, the State of the Union address again. Boy, that was...
All right, so
that was great.
What did Bush do
that
this time?
That was great. Well, what he didn't do is, I guess,
New
Orleans is fixed right now because he didn't mention that at all.
Yes, and that was sort of scathing. Not only did he not mention Katrina, but he did also not mention any poverty issues or issues that are really pertinent to the majority of Americans.
Yeah, I guess it's all fixed right now. And since we're winning in Iraq, everything is hunky-dory.
And just as a related item to that, Lieberman had previously come out and said that we needed a full investigation of Katrina and everything that happened. And since then, he's backed away and now said, no, we don't need to look into that.
Right, our newest Republican senator, Joseph Lieberman from Connecticut.
There you go. I'm not sure what he is.
No, I'm not sure he knows either.
But when Bush says bipartisan, he's talking about all the Republicans and Lieberman.
Yeah, that's true.
That's his idea of bipartisan.
That's true.
Now, it was also reported that, non-related item here, 51% of American women now live without a spouse.
Yeah,
in 2005.
Didn't Gloria Steinem say that a woman needs a man like a fish needs an umbrella? No, a fish needs a bicycle. That's what it was. And in related to that, there's not enough women now in China. So women are doing great. If you don't have a bicycle, women, and you really need a bicycle, or you need a fish, or you need a man, China's your place to go. I guess because men were traditionally more valued than women. China, of course, has the one child policy that people have been either aborting the women early or giving them away for adoption, and now there's not enough women in China. So there's our golden opportunity, women.
An interesting related item. The GOP senators blocked the minimum wage increase, according to Reuters, which came out on the 24th. So it's interesting. This is an issue that the vast majority of Americans are for. It's part of the Democrats' 100-hour plan, and it's thought to be this is the one issue that may not go through the first time, but it is thought that they are going to get this through later on.
Yeah, really, how could anybody be against the minimum wage? It hasn't gone up in 10 years. If anyone's income hasn't gone up in 10 years at all, this would be a real problem. I mean, you look at the CEO's income and the percentage that's been going up. Try to live on $5 an hour. Really, you can't pay your health insurance on $5 an hour. You certainly can't afford a place to live on $5 an hour.
And Al Franken had a great joke about this that I heard. He was talking in front of Republicans, and he does that. Al Franken, the comedian from comedy, from Air America, et cetera, and Saturday Night Live. And he was talking in front of the Americans, Republicans about minimum wage. And he said, I want to let you in the room know that this is a very popular issue, that most Democrats and most Americans feel that this is a thing that should be done, and every waiter in the room serving you.
That's right. Are we getting a call in now, Steve?
We are.
All right, okay. Hopefully that's about our bodies.
So we're going to have on the line now our bodies exhibit. Are you folks there?
We're here. Sorry, we had some technical difficulties here.
You're late. Okay. Yeah, we're hanging on by a thread here waiting for you. No, just kidding.
Okay. Is this Evelyn which we're speaking with?
Okay, so here comes the introduction, Steve. Bring us in to the Bodies Exhibit special report from Albany Law School.
Okay, we've got Evelyn Tannenbaum, professor at Albany Law School and a faculty member of the Alden March Bioethics Institute at Albany Medical School. Janine Taranto, professor at Albany Law School. And I think we're supposed to have Adam Lunsbury and Brian Reese, students who have done research on the ethical issues involving the Bodies Exhibit. Now, let me start off. I've seen that Bodies Exhibit. I loved it. What's the big hang-up that you have?
Well, one of the issues has to do with whether informed consent has been given by the bodies that are displayed there.
Okay. Now, there were two bodies exhibits, I understand. There's the one, of course, that was in Tampa, and there was another one also. We're speaking about the one that has been in Tampa and going around that was originally done with Chinese people.
Yeah, there are two main exhibits. One is Body World, which is by Von Hagens. The ones in Florida are Bodies, the exhibition.
Okay, and you're speaking about both of them.
Yeah, we're speaking about both of them, although we aim this for Bodies the Exhibition because that's the one in Florida.
Okay, now what's the big problem?
Well, the key distinction between the two exhibits is that Bodies, it's unknown to a certain degree where the donations are coming from. Body Worlds, on the other hand, claims that they have all donor consent. So all of the exhibits that you see in Body Worlds are all from people who have consented to be plasticized and exhibited.
Are they also from China?
The ones at Bodies the Exhibition are all from China, from Dalian University in China.
So you think there may be dissidents, perhaps, or talk show radio hosts, perhaps, that have their bodies exhibited there?
Well, the premier that runs the show says that all of those are unclaimed bodies and none of them are prisoners. But no one's seen that documentation. And some people think that China is sort of unreliable with its documentation anyway.
Okay. Well, Michelangelo and Leonardo, one of the way they learned about anatomy was, of course, was actually digging up bodies of unclaimed bodies in paupers' grounds. And, of course, they came up with tremendous works of art. What do you have to say about that?
You mean using bodies as works of art?
Well, no, they didn't use them as bodies of works of art, but they took the bodies and they used them to study art.
Well, actually, that's interesting because von Hagen's whole premise, he's an anatomist. He claims to be part of what he does as an anatomist, and a lot of his work is based on Renaissance anatomy. So Leonardo da Vinci and that whole school is one of the reasons why he has become what he has become.
Okay, so you have no problem basically with the exhibit. You just have a problem with the fact that the people did not necessarily give their okay to be exhibited. Is that correct?
In fact, in the Body Worlds exhibit, there are plenty of people who've donated their bodies, and we think that exhibit's fine.
Okay, so it's just the other one. How do you think they got the bodies?
Or Bodies or Body Worlds?
Well, the bodies, the one where they had the unclaimed bodies.
Well, that's exactly the question. I mean, it's questionable where they came from, and that's where the problem arises. I mean, it's possible they could be Chinese prisoners, and some of the stories that have been in the media are that they are prisoners who are purposely executed prisoner style, so their bodies will be in a good condition for this type of preservation and subsequent exhibition. So that's where the question comes in, and that's where it becomes questionable.
Is it true that in China they've been selling the organs of executed prisoners as well?
There's a real question whether they are executed prisoners. In fact, Premier strongly contends that they're not. But, no, they haven't been selling the organs, although there are some other serious ethical issues that have been raised.
Well, you mentioned Premiers, and you're talking about Premier Exhibitions Incorporated?
That's correct. That's the company that's running this bodies exhibit.
Yeah, they're not doing it for free?
No, in fact, they paid over $25 million to lease these bodies for a five-year period.
Wow.
And they're a profit-making organization.
Have they actually made a profit?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen the exhibit?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I thought it was a fascinating exhibit.
Now, did you feel that it was somewhat degrading or did not have dignity for the bodies?
Well, I think our main view is that as long as a person's able to choose to be exhibited, it is respecting their dignity.
Go ahead and introduce yourself. We have a new person here.
Whether that was given, and thus, if it wasn't, I think our view is that it isn't respecting their dignity.
I'm sorry. Introduce yourself, because we have a new person here.
Sorry, I'm Brian.
Okay, Brian. And I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Just repeat what you said.
I said the main view that we put forth is that as long as the people chose to be exhibited, it is respecting their dignity. The question with the bodies show itself is that we're not sure if that choice was made. If it was not, then we do feel there's a possibility that these people's dignity was violated.
But what about independent of that, just dignity to human bodies in general? We bury our bodies. We don't display our dead bodies unless you're into zombie movies, I suppose. But how about just general dignity to the human body and to the spirit, I guess more from a spiritual point of view?
I think, you know, we didn't deal with, we avoided religious issues, but from a legal point of view and from an ethical point of view, we felt that so long as the humanness of the body and the identity of the body as a human being were respected, that was respectful behavior.
Well, when in a medical school, when bodies are dissected, no one knows the name of the body. They're not particularly treated with great reverence. What do you say to that, or for that matter, for artists who study the human body?
We would say that the cadavers are buried afterwards. Many students in medical schools are asked to give great respect to the cadavers that they're dissecting, and in medical schools, those bodies are then either cremated or buried, and a memorial service is given.
Okay, so basically, it's a greater good issue. Is the educational content of this exhibit worth the what you would call the degradation of these bodies?
We wouldn't call it degradation. We think these bodies were aesthetically and beautifully presented.
I mean, it really comes down to a matter of not just consent necessarily, but the greater good. And I think that although the greater good may be served in bodies in terms of educating the public in a way that they wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to be educated, what is lacking here is the consent. And with Body World, both components are present. And that's basically what is provided for in the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, which has been adopted in some form or another in 50 states. So what that provides for is that in so long as somebody donates their body and it is provided for the purpose of research or education, then that type of donation to a medical school can be made. So in the same sense, it is then made to Body World. It's a parallel type of situation.
So
whereas bodies, you're not getting both of those components.
So your position is that you should close down the Premier exhibit. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. We just think there's more of an ethical issue because those bodies are unclaimed rather than donated. So we think there's more of a question with that exhibit than with Body World.
Just take 1 second, and for those people that haven't seen Body Exhibit or don't know what it is, just describe what we're talking about and the process involved in preparing for it.
Steve, this is Adam. Basically, the bodies exhibit is based on cadavers that have been plasticized, and what that process is they remove the water and fat from the body and then replace it with different plastics and then mold it into whatever position they see fit.
All right, and also it's not just whole bodies doing things like throwing balls. They also have a organs exhibit too, where they have really hundreds of organs as well, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, did you see the one with the lungs? Boy, I was just blown away from that. I'm not a smoker, but if I was a smoker, that would change me right away. They had a beautiful pink lung of a non-smoker compared to the really putrid-looking black lung of a smoker. That to me, that's a picture that's worth 1,000 words. And even if someone's perhaps their rights were trampled on, I think the educational content of that just is so overwhelming.
Well, Steve, this is Brian again. I think we would wholeheartedly agree with you. And in particular, the contrasting organs, like you said, healthy versus unhealthy, a lot of visitors to both shows, both Bodies and Body Worlds, have said that that was one of the biggest effects the show had on them, is that they would now want to take better care of themselves and live a healthier life after they've seen what happens if you don't.
Okay, so what's your purpose then in doing the studies that you're doing? Is it to prevent future problems? Is it to get better signatures from people willing to donate their bodies, or are you trying to close down the show?
Actually, we're trying to do none of those. We're just bioethicists and legal scholars, and all we were trying to do is determine what the ethical and legal issues were in having this display. We think that it's really important for many reasons for people to think about what are the implications of showing a plasticized body anonymously in a sterile condition so that you can remove yourself from that body and just see it as a work of art. Does that create some real ethical issues? That was more our concern.
And what's your conclusion?
Our conclusion is that if there's informed consent and if the body is presented in a way that these displays are presented, that there is no real ethical issue and that people should have the choice to be displayed this way rather than decay or be cremated if that's what they choose,
And so long as there's informed consent, we think there's no problem.
Okay, so to repeat, you're bioethicists. You're not attorneys. So you're not. There's no action that's being considered. We're just analyzing the situation. Is that correct?
Right. We're attorneys.
And by the way,
attorneys. We're at the law school. We are attorneys. But this was more of a scholarly investigation.
So you're not preparing any kind of action then, are you? There's nothing that's going to be determined by the courts then with this issue, is there?
No, although there was a case in San Francisco.
And what happened with that?
In San Francisco, they passed a, was it an ordinance or statute?
They passed a local ordinance that requires that the exhibit demonstrate that there was consent by those who were displayed.
All right, let me just say, because I have to, it's WSLR 96.5, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. And we're listening to Evelyn Tenenbaum and others from the Albany Law School about the bodies exhibit controversy. Thank you very much. One of the comments was made was that the bodies were displayed in a circus or kind of a freakish atmosphere. And you have some people saying that they were, and that's a problem. Other people are saying, and you just said it yourself, that they were not. Comment on that issue about how they were displayed.
I think, however you characterize the exhibit, whether it's morbid or freakish or voyeuristic or however you want to look at it, in the aggregate, those attributes really reinforce and even augment any sort of educational value that the display may have. Generally, I think those attributes add to the curiosity level, and we'll get more people in there to view the display.
And let me just share my own experience as a medical professional. When I saw cadavers and also the same type of pathology demonstrations where you could see healthy and unhealthy organs and organ systems, you see it once and it says it all. You'll learn that, and you'll think twice before taking any chances and getting any of those diseases like atherosclerotic plaques on your aorta or smoking in your lungs. To see it, there's just no other way to describe it other than to see it for yourself.
Yeah, there's enormous power in seeing the actual body. I mean, it opens up an opportunity for those who are not in medical school or not medical professionals to see this type of demonstration.
And as an amateur artist, it was wonderful seeing how the muscles reacted with each other, because a good piece of art always shows some movement in there. And the muscles were moving, they were acting against each other, they were contracting, they were... it was just a wonderful thing as an artist to be able to see that, too.
It's also a celebration of life to have them displayed like that. Instead of mourning their death, you're in effect celebrating the life of these plastinates.
All right, one other thing. When this exhibit first came to the Tampa area, it was reported in the papers that this was in violation of the law. Can you comment on that in the initial presentation?
In violation of Florida law, or?
I'm not sure. I think it might have been in violation of that original act, which said that you needed permission to display the bodies. Of course, nothing was done. There were no lawsuits or anything, and the exhibit stayed. But there was that initial comment which came out when the exhibit first opened, and it was thought that some people took some chances early on.
I think, Steve, to comment on that, there were some concerns that they didn't have an appropriate electrical or building permit initially, and I don't know if that's what they were actually commenting on, but I didn't read anything directly related to the display of the bodies.
All right, and we have one other person in the studio who I'm going to sort of put on the hot seat now. Andrea Daniels is going to be joining us for the next segment, and she's here. She's running for Sarasota City Commissioner. All right, Andrea, would you bring this exhibit to Sarasota? What do you think?
I think it would be great to have it in Sarasota.
Great. Where would we put it?
That's a good question. Give us a few years to develop something.
Okay, good.
Or maybe we'll come up with something else equally controversial. You never know. All right, folks, I think we've talked a little bit about this. Would you like to wrap it up? Any comments? Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. We're trying to think if we have any closing comments.
Dead silence there for a minute here.
Well, we enjoyed having you here. Apparently we're all on the same page. that we liked the exhibit. We thought it was very worthwhile, very educational. The question is, of course, is how they obtained the bodies and whether informed consent was given. And hopefully in future times at exhibits like this, there will be a better system of informed consent so that we can all be on the same page and enjoy what could be an extremely educational, interesting exhibit.
We all agree with you so much.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Be well, and we'll talk to you later. Thank you. Okay, that was a few folks, including Evelyn Tenenbaum, professor at Albany Law School, with the controversy surrounding the bodies exhibit, and we thank them very much for that. All right, Andrea. We have Andrea Daniels here, and we're going to put you sort of on the hot seat here, and you're running for Sarasota City Commissioner. Let's let Steve read a little intro bio for you, and then we'll get going.
You grew up in Chicago.
I did. Go Bears.
Yes. Okay. So you're a wetback like the rest of us, right?
Yeah. Would you be willing to induce labor to see the game?
No, but I'd probably run out my stomach like the other woman in my to get the tickets. I'm just kidding.
Oh, that was a great one too. I saw her showing her belly so she could for Bears tickets.
I know. I want to know who took her up on it, if anyone, as of yet.
I wonder what they'd give her, what she'd have to do for 50-yard line tickets.
Move on, guys. Move on. Come on.
Anyway, Andrea,
you've
got an MBA from DePaul University, and you were vice president of the Child Abuse Prevention Service Board, and you raised actually $100,000 in 15 months. That's really wonderful. And then you got an MA in Mississippi State University, and you taught freshman composition and technical writing for engineers. So you've had quite an interesting background. What makes you want to become a city commissioner?
Well, I am definitely not a politician, and I'm more likely than not politically correct most of the time. But
you mean like this show?
Yes.
Exactly.
That's
so
why
I fit
we were
right
inviting
in.
You. That's great.
But I think that we definitely have a lot of issues in our cities, in our city right now, and that the average citizen's voice, like mine, is not being heard.
Okay. Now, we had Mary Ann Servian on the other day, and I have to say, she was quite nice and very, very knowledgeable. What makes you think that you can do a better job?
Well, I think she's quite nice also, but in her press release announcing her candidacy, she said that too frequently City Hall has not listened to citizens' concerns or is not taking care of business. And I agree with that completely. The problem is she's been doing this job for 6 years, so why should we think that another 4 years she'll finally get it right?
Okay. Let me ask you a question about city planning, where you fit on this. Obviously, everybody's talking about Andreas Duaney, who says we should have a more walkable, more interesting city. At the same time, we're building high-rise after high-rise after high-rise and big walls. And we have a waterfront, but it's almost inaccessible to downtown right now. What do we do about that waterfront?
Well, I think we definitely need to make it more accessible, and by calming traffic and creating a pedestrian-friendly and a bicycle-friendly city, it would become that.
I'd love to see that, but how do we calm traffic? That's already a big traffic jam right then, and some people in Longboat Creek quite rightly say that it's difficult to get through right as it is right now with the traffic going as quickly.
And we're not talking about road rage here.
No, we're talking about Route 41, right where Main Street crosses it, where you really can't get across the street without taking your life into your hands.
No, you can't, and I actually just drove to come here. I just drove through that, and you know, everyone's cruising at about 40, 45 miles an hour, which is not the speed limit there. And I saw a woman crossing on Ringling, and she crossed against the light. She stood in the median. She was jogging. And, you know, the rest of us are going northbound quite quickly. And I thought, okay, you should really wait for the light. And maybe part of the short-term solution is to have longer lights, which I know the drivers will not be happy about, but at least it will give citizens the opportunity to cross safely.
Well, on one hand, we really can't have a backup of the traffic. On the other hand, 10 seconds to cross that street, I mean, I'd have to have my jogging shoes on and go awfully fast to get across the street in those 10 seconds. Plus, you've got cars making right turns, which cut across it. How about doing an overpass? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I know that's quite controversial, and I'm from Chicago, where we do have some of those to connect people to the lakefront. And I always felt very safe doing that. We also had the luxury of doing underpasses too, which unfortunately we don't hear because we're so close to sea level. But you know, aesthetically, it may not look as nice, but it definitely would be safe, and that would be something that I think we should consider.
Yeah, you could always put a mermaid or two on it.
Exactly. We could turn it into a giant sculpture.
Sure. Now, how do we get people up over the overpass? Do you have escalators inside of them?
I've seen a couple where you can you have ramps to make sure that it's accessible to everyone, along with stairs. And the one, again, that was near my home in Chicago had that. So anyone in a wheelchair or with a bicycle or moms with strollers could go up the ramp. And then there was a second path for stairs if it was just a pedestrian.
Great. Now, suppose we do get accessibility to the waterfront. Would you allow retail to go up on the waterfront, or would you have condominiums, or would you have just a park? What's your best feeling on this?
I think the more that we can preserve our green spaces, the better. And so I would like to see it be green, which means a park, as often as possible. Again, comparing to Chicago, the great thing about this giant urban city is that there were a lot of green spaces. And same with New York. You think about Central Park. A city needs green spaces in order to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly do. Do you think we ought to reroute Route 41?
I think the more we could encourage people to take alternate routes like 301, the better. I'll say this, though, again, coming up here at 8:15 in the morning, I drove across town and it only took me 7 minutes to get here. There isn't this huge traffic problem in the morning on 41. At least I didn't see it this morning.
Well, I've seen it some other times, and it's horrendous.
Oh, maybe I just got lucky.
I think you must have gotten lucky because, boy, I've been stuck in that traffic for, it seems like days. I guess it was probably only hours, but it's a long time.
Well, what do you think are the major issues that Sarasota, it's the city of Sarasota, because you're running for the city commissioner spot, what are the other major issues that we should be concerned about?
I think that our development has been, dare I say, willy-nilly.
You said the D word here.
I did.
Okay,
and I called it willy-nilly, so I'm in trouble now. We have some plans that people seem to be behind. We're deviating from them. And we're building developments that are not really appropriate for our city.
I'm going to bring up the C word. That's concurrency. And ever since I've moved to Sarasota over 20 years ago, they talked about concurrency. They had it in the epoxy plan for the county, and they had it in the city plan. And it seems like it's a word that's being ignored. Concurrency, of course, means having the infrastructure in place before you allowed more population to come in. What are we going to do about that? Are we going to bring back that doctrine?
I think we need to. We've been developing without the infrastructure, and that is probably my biggest issue that I have with what's been going on. We're going to have all these new residents moving in, and we're going to try to create a critical mass of retail in the downtown area, but we have very small side streets to get people there.
And so are we going to enlarge the side streets and ruin the charm, or are we going to just have less people? How are we going to do that?
Well, I definitely don't want to ruin the charm. So if those are my only two choices, and I'm sure there's a third option, which I'll think of at a later date. No, I'm kidding. I think we need to curb development for a while and really be smart about what we develop as opposed to just letting it go. And especially with what's going on with the real estate market, now, I know we're planning for the future, and that's great, but we have to take into consideration the current residents and the current small business owners. And a perfect example is the Palm Avenue Merchants. They've really gone through a tough time with the construction of 1350 Main Street, and that's finally starting to wind down, and they were hoping, I think, that their businesses would start to bounce back a bit, and now we're going to hit them again with the DeMarque Hotel project. And what I don't understand is why, at a bare minimum, we couldn't have put that on hold for a while. I know that many of the people I've spoken to said, well, you can't do that. That's illegal. The developer will sue. And it's a possibility that a developer would threaten to sue, but an article I read in the Rocky Mountain Institute stated that it's a tactic that a lot of developers use, and very few ever follow through with it. And then you can always settle outside of court.
And that was city-owned land anyway where that was built.
Exactly.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a big ghost town over there where that is. There's just so many vacancies right now, and there's so many vacancies in the stores. I know you talked about the Rocky Mountain Institute. I know in the city of Aspen, they have a legal mandate where if you build a certain number of units, you have to have a certain number of affordable units as well, and those go up for lottery. for people in lower incomes. Would you like to do something like that here?
I think that would be fabulous, because what I don't understand is that, you know, we're building all these luxury high rises, which is great for people who can afford to live there, but who's going to check them out at the grocery store? Who's going to, you know, be their waiter or waitress at a restaurant? I mean, average people like me need to be able to afford to live in the city. And I was lucky enough to move in 9 years ago before the prices inflated. And right now I can't imagine that, how teachers, how most of our city workers can live in Sarasota unless they've been here for so long. And in order to have a balance like that, I think that's a brilliant idea, and we should absolutely do something like that. I'm all for finding logical and consistent solutions to affordable housing and attainable housing, and that sounds like a perfect one.
Well, that is a good one. What else would you do for affordable housing?
I think we need to be smart about where we put it.
Where would you put it? I mean, let's call a spade, nobody wants affordable housing in their backyard.
All right, let me just jump in. This is WSLR, 96.5 Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. Well, this is Andrea Daniels running for Sarasota City Commissioner. Go.
Well, I think the solution that you just proposed by having it mixed, that makes it fair for everyone, because then it's not only the developer will make money, because they'll make money on the high-end units, and they may break even on the more affordable and attainable units, so they win. It creates a diverse neighborhood, so all the residents win, and socioeconomically diverse, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Well, we'd like to see that happen. Now, what about downtown? They're talking about this Benderson development that's going to open up on University Parkway. It's going to be like another city there. That's not your bailiwick, of course, because that's county. I mean, aside from the horrendous traffic that's going to occur there, what's that going to do to all these businesses in the city? Can we afford another high-end development? Will that take things away from the city?
I think it could, unless we really start to get on the ball. You know, right now the traffic in that area with Lakewood Ranch and all the neighborhoods out there is talk about a traffic jam any time of day. And now we're going to bring in this mega mall with these high-end retailers, you know, which is great because for people who don't want to drive to Tampa or Orlando to go to the Nordstrom's, now they can go in their own backyard.
There's poor suffering people. They,
exactly.
They have to go so far to buy themselves a $500 pocketbook.
It's just amazing.
It's a shame.
It really is.
We should have more sympathy for them.
Well, the nice thing it will do for Sarasota is it will bring more people from other counties and more tourists to the area to shop, because let's face it, a lot of people like to shop. So it could have some benefits to us as long as we really concentrate on taking care of our local business owners and fostering that. I mean, I'm all for, you know, certain retail chains. I shop at a few of them, but if I have a choice, I'll shop locally, and I'd like to be able to still have that choice.
Well, do you think our neat little independent stores that exist right now on Main Street and downtown, think they'll be able to compete against those large developments?
They have to, otherwise we'll just be another mall, and that would be a shame.
Yeah.
And I mean, I am a retailer via farmers markets. So I'm the smallest of small businesses. I aspire to have a store on Main Street someday and be a small independent retailer with maybe some four walls as opposed to a booth. So I think we have to, in order to preserve and protect the character of Sarasota, we need to preserve and protect those businesses.
Well, that's
go all right. Ahead, how about issues about the environment and water and those kinds of issues for the city?
Well, I think another thing, as we rapidly develop, we are taking away our green spaces, and we're putting a lot of extra burden on systems like water. And that in Florida, well, anywhere, I think it's, it's something that needs to be paid very close attention to, but especially here with the amount of development that we have going on in the state.
So would you curb development then in the city if you could and wait till we get enough water and enough roads in there?
If I could wave a magic wand and do it, yes, I would.
Okay. Well, what do you say to the people who say, well, they're all going to sue us? Do we take the chance and spend some money on attorneys? I realize this is not an easy question, but it's something that a commissioner will have to face.
It's not, and I think if it's an inappropriate development, we should take the risk. And if it turns out that we get sued, we can figure it out at that point. But, again, according to this article, it's a tactic that a lot of developers use, and very few ever follow through with it. And because, honestly, if we don't want them, chances are someone else somewhere else does.
Okay. Well, tell me this. You mentioned inappropriate developments. Let's be specific. Put yourself on the line. Which ones that are coming up are inappropriate in your estimation?
Well, I think the DeMarque Hotel development project could be fine down the road, but I think that doing it back-to-back with 1350 is inappropriate.
What about Pineapple Square?
I think Pineapple Square, the plans themselves look quite beautiful. My concern is the lot that was the Methodist Church parking lot is a leased lot, from my understanding. And because it's a leased lot, people who try to get mortgages in that building will not be able to due to our laws. And so they have to figure that out. The other thing that's, and again, this isn't so much about the aesthetics of the building, but about the process, the city lot that they purchased, there's no riders attached to that saying that it has to be used for this project. So if the project doesn't end up going forward, then they have this great piece of property that they got from us at a very, very low price that they can turn around and sell for something else.
So what would you do about it right now, since papers have already been signed?
I don't know if there's anything you can do about it right now, because the papers have been signed. It's something that I think the city should have considered ahead of time.
Right. I mean, I guess there's two parts to running a campaign. One is being retrospective and saying things that should have been done differently. Now we have the luxury of 2020 hindsight. What about prospectively? What can we do now?
I think we need to not give away everything to developers. I mean, at times we've seemed a little desperate, and we don't need to be. I mean, this is a great town, and we have a lot of opportunity now and in the future, and we just need to realize our own value, and we need to preserve the character of Sarasota above all, because not only for the people who live here, but even the people who want to live here, we need to make sure that it remains an accessible, livable, enjoyable town for everyone, not just some.
What are the big attractions of Sarasota, of course, is the beach and the waterfront. What are we going to do if red tide keeps getting as bad as it is and doesn't get better, or, God forbid, gets even worse and no one can actually use the waterfront because they're coughing all the time? Do you have any ideas on that issue?
I really don't. I know that Moat Marine's been doing a lot of work on it, and they, hopefully the greater minds than mine will find a solution, because it affects everyone, no matter how old you are, what your health is. It's not only makes it difficult for people to breathe, then, you know, we're going to lose tourist dollars in the entire city.
Well, would you support using city tax dollars to support Moat Marine and its research?
I absolutely would.
But how much would you give them?
Oh, I don't know. How much do they need?
Well, I'm not running for city council.
Let me also mention, next week we're going to have our water show, and we should have representatives from many different viewpoints talking about local water issues and also national water issues. So be sure and tune in next week for a lot more information about this as well.
Cool. I'll definitely do that, because, I mean, I have certain issues that I am aware of that I'm passionate about, but by no means do I pretend to know everything about everything, and I'm very much interested in learning not only what people in my district think, but people in the city and the county in general.
Do you drink the water in Sarasota?
I drink a filtered version
of it. Okay.
All right, let me ask you this. It has nothing to do with your being a commissioner, but how do you feel about the war?
Oh, gosh. You're supposed to say
which war.
Yeah, exactly. I think the people who are over there fighting, we need to be respectful of them because they believe they're doing what's right, and often they're doing what they've been told to do. However, the people who got us into it in the first place, I think made a huge mistake, and it might have been good intentions at the beginning, but there's no plan, or there's no visible plan, and I fear that it will turn into another Vietnam if it hasn't already.
Okay. Another issue is that there's been problems with voting right here in Sarasota.
I'm shocked.
It is not a Sarasota City Commissioner issue, but it did come to the County Commission, and they were instrumental and actually are still trying to spend money to fight the fair elections referendum, which was passed, and we're going to talk to Kendra Muntz, who's supposed to be calling in any second, about that. How do you feel about fair voting and electronic voting machines?
Well, as someone who has a background in technology, I like to think that we can trust technology. However, I think in this case, we need a paper trail.
Trust technology or the technologists who made the technology?
Well,
that's right. Garbage in, garbage out.
I would like to think that they would have done a fabulous job, but I know that early on, when there was the early voting, they had problems, and the problems were made aware to the people in charge, and the whole thing was just a disaster. And
let's cut to the crux. In your election that's coming up, we're probably going to use the same voting machines we used in the last election. How do you feel about that? Do you think you've got a fair shot at it?
I would hope so, and I don't think they've actually released the machines yet, so I don't know if we know what we're going to use.
No, they haven't, but that's what the Secretary of Elections wants to do, Kathy Dent wants to do, is release the machines and use them again in the election.
Again, from a technology background, I know that it's less than 2 months away, so to be able to implement anything new for us is impossible in the technology world. So maybe we should go back to the hanging chads.
Yeah, how about just borrowing some machines from another county? It's only one election. It's only for a couple of days.
That's a really good idea. You should be running.
I'd much rather sit here in my seat and criticize than actually be in the hot seat like you're willing to do.
All right, folks, I'd like to switch gears. We just have about 5 minutes left or so, and let's do some other surreal news. Let's go back to some generalized surreal news items. And I want to report that Heather Mills in the entertainment industry was married to Paul McCartney.
Yeah, she's got a great hourly rate.
Yeah. So how much per hour is she getting if you take the amount of time that she was married to Paul McCartney and divide it by the $62 million in cash that she's and property that she's getting. So how much does that come out to be per hour?
Well, that is $2,000 an hour. And let me tell you, there are few professions where you can make $2,000 an hour unless you're chairman of, say, Home Depot, for example, or other such professions, honorable professions like that. And I won't even go into those.
Yeah, I mean, we could certainly get into trouble commenting on that.
Oh,
so let's move on before we get into trouble. Now, but let's get actually to some more trouble. The since high definition TV came out, we know where we're going here. It has a problem for one of the industries. So high definition TV was a problem for which industry?
The porn industry.
The porn industry. Why?
Well, it's not so sexy. I guess when you're broken up into little pixels and things don't go quite where they belong,
you can see sort of pimples and wrinkles in the old porn industry, which, by the way, was instrumental in getting the upgrade for the various media that we have. They were actually helping in that. But now, not so much so, because they're seeing too much and people are not looking that good in porn with high-definition TVs.
There was a photographer, David Hamilton, who used to put put Vaseline on the lenses of his cameras to purposely blur the images, because that was much sexier. So, and of course, the old movies, they, every time they did a nice shot of the starlets, it was always a little bit blurry, and that always was a lot nicer than actually seeing everything in a, you could call it a gynecological view.
Sounds like we're at the bodies exhibit again.
We certainly are.
And related to that is they're thinking about establishing a XXX internet site, so you have something.com, it would be something.xxx, to delineate and mandating that for pornography sites on the internet.
Hmm. Well, let me talk about Charlie Crist for a second.
Okay.
I really was not in favor of his election, but he seems to be doing a very good job. He seems to be doing a moderate job, and he's coming along with the property taxes. He is getting some action on that. And now all of a sudden they're coming out with something that happened in 1989 where apparently he might have given up a child for adoption. Nothing wrong with that. And they're coming up with that as something terrible. What's going on with Charlie? Are they trying to get him now? Is the insurance industry that he attacked so vehemently? Who's after Charlie?
I think that's absurd that they would even think that giving up a child for adoption is a negative thing. As someone who's adopted, I'm actually completely offended by that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's a privacy issue involved quite, you know, as well. That's a very important thing. I mean, there's an adopted child, and this is a whole other show we could go into, certainly has a right to find her adopted parents if they're willing to allow that. But it's a wonderful gift to give a child to a family that really wants them.
Absolutely. I have the best parents in the world, so it was a wonderful thing for me. And if he did do that, good for him.
Yes, and my dear daughter is adopted as well, and we're very grateful for the people that adopted them. And if I could shake their hand, if I knew who they were, if they wanted to be found, I'd be more than happy to.
Well, I don't think it's me.
We're coming up to the top of the hour. This is WSLR 96.5. We're low power, which does not mean low impact, FM in Sarasota, Florida. And you're listening to The Surreal News Show. We had a special report on the bodies exhibit, controversy by Albany Law School Evelyn Tenenbaum and others. We have Andrea Daniels, who joined us in the studio. She's running for Sarasota City Commissioner. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you very much.
And
this
we have just
enjoyable.
One more minute or so to bring us out. And I just want to remind everybody, if you're traveling overseas or into Canada or Mexico, we're now requiring passports. Your birth certificates and driver's licenses will no longer get you across the border in the United States, in the contiguous countries for the United States. And that went into effect this week. Other things to report, according to Wired, the CIA is now using Facebook to do some of its recruiting. And I think part of that is that the CIA is having difficulty time recruiting people. And part of that may be from the Valerie Plame incident, and also the fact that we did not have enough translators for Arabic languages. And, of course, they didn't allow the Arab people to be part of the CIA. And now they're sort of changing their view, and it's just a mess.
It is. How about Walmart? Good old
Walmart,
our famous.
Talk to me about Walmart.
We wouldn't have a show without Walmart. Now they're under investigation for selling
We have to replace Catherine Harris. So.
Pardon me?
We have to replace Catherine Harris with something.
That's very true.
Okay, go.
Now they're under investigation for allegedly, and I'll say allegedly, selling non-organic food as organic. We thought it was great that Walmart's going to go organic. This is going to be great. And all of a sudden now, they're just selling the non-organic, which, of course, is much, much cheaper for them to buy as organic. What's going on there? You sell food.
I do, and I'm very torn on this. I must say I am not a fan of Walmart. I shop locally as often as possible, which means I get my organic produce from the organic vendors at the farmer's market primarily. And to offer it, to be able to offer it, though, on a large scale to people who maybe don't have access to markets like we do, I think is a very good thing. However, I'm not surprised that this has happened, because whether they know about it or not, it could have been passed through one of, you know, a distributor going to them. And I think it's a sad commentary that people would try to pretend that something's organic when it's not.
Well, Sam Walton must be turning over in his grave, because he was an honorable man, but since his passing, and unfortunately they didn't plasticize him.
And unlike this show, which is completely dishonorable and non-organic, certified. All right, that's it, guys. We're out of here next week, our water show. We also have Michael Parente coming in a couple weeks, and he's also going to be speaking at the Manatee Community College for a WSLR fundraiser coming up later in the month in February. You've been listening to the Surreal News Show on 96.5 Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. Ben is here. He's got some great Russian music and other classical music coming up after this. You've been listening to the Surreal News on WSLR. And let me just announce, there is going to be a anti-war rally to protest the war in Iraq. There's a big rally going on in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. And there's going to be a smaller rally here, which we're hoping will be well attended, 10 o'clock at Marina Jacks tomorrow, that Saturday, protest the war. See you there.